Now, if you were here last time I spoke, you remember that I showed you that even difficult mathematical sums, often, if you know how to do them, turn out to be a lot easier than what you think. And it's the same with Bible prophecy. Now, when I used to go on the internet, I used to get all these people who used to say, oh, Bible prophecy is impossible to understand. The book of Revelation is impossible to understand. And God never intended us to understand it. Well, how daft is that? Surely the whole point of writing any book is to give people information that will lead to them having a greater knowledge and understanding of the subject. Today we've got lots of people in the world who hate Israel because they know nothing about the subject. Oh, Israel drove people out of the land. Israel did this and that. Some years ago, two American correspondents wrote a book called Facts and Myths About Israel, in which it listed 300 different lies that had been told about Israel over about the last 50 years. And they told you what the lie is and they told you what the truth was. So it's important to be well informed about things, and it's important to be well informed about Bible prophecy. Roger Price, who was probably the most knowledgeable person on the Bible in Britain in the 1970s, sadly he died when he was only about 40 from a rare strain of cancer, but he used to say that understanding the book of Revelation was easy peasy, lemon squeezy. That was how he put it. Well, it's a lot easier than what people think. The book of Daniel has often been attacked a great deal because it gives very precise prophecies that have led to people trying to say that it was written after the events. And yet Jesus himself, when he talked about the Olivet Discourse, he referred to Daniel as the prophet. So he clearly regarded Daniel as being somebody who was a prophet and his prophecies were genuine. The book of Daniel actually gives you the most staggering information about who the Messiah is of any book in the Old Testament. It actually proves that Jesus must have been the Jewish Messiah. So let's have a look today at the book of Daniel. And I'm going to tell you quite a bit about the history of it, and then we're going to look at how the Bible proves that Jesus had to have been the Messiah. First of all, Daniel 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hands with part of the vessels of the house of God, the temple, which he carried into the land of Babylon, to the house of his God, and he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. The third year of Jehoiakim here would have been the year 605 BC. He actually started reigning in 608, but the Judeans called that the year of accession. They did not consider that to be his first year. His first year was the first full year, so it would have been 607. So the third year would have been 605. This was the first year of King Nebuchadnezzar's reign. This is Nebuchadnezzar II, who was the son of Nabopolassar, who had just died, and so Nebuchadnezzar took over from him. And he came down the southern coast of Israel, and eventually he marched upon Jerusalem. So that's who he was. Now, he was actually somebody who married a Median princess, and he formed a great alliance with the Medes at one stage. The Babylonians and the Medes formed a great alliance with each other at that particular stage. Now, according to Jeremiah, the prophet Jeremiah said that they would go into captivity for 70 years. There were two reasons why they went into captivity. One, in 2 Kings 21, was the sins of Manasseh, who even killed his own son by worshipping Molech and put him in the fire and destroyed him. Talking about abortion this morning, well, what about that? The second was because they did not keep sabbatical years, and for 490 years they failed to keep sabbatical years. Every seventh year was supposed to be a sabbatical year. That meant that they owed God 70 years of Sabbaths. And in Leviticus 26 it taught that if they did not keep these things, that eventually God would drive them into captivity and that they would then have to keep Sabbaths because they wouldn't be there to prevent it. So already we've got this idea in our heads of 490 years, 70 years, and 7 years. It's all to do with them going off into captivity. Okay, if you turn now to Daniel chapter 5. Now as we move through Daniel, we find out certain things that happened. Some people try to say that they weren't in Babylon for 70 years because they were there from 605 to 536, which is only 69 years. There's two reasonable answers to this. One is that the Jews counted every year as a year, and if you count all those years as a year inclusive, they do equal 70 years. The other possible answer is that the Bible always talks about the biblical year, which is 360 days. So if you equate it into the Gregorian year that we live by, it's only 69 years. You find that 69 Gregorian years and 70 biblical years, there's about a 2.5 day difference between the two, if you work it all out. Okay, in Daniel chapter 5, we read about Belshazzar's feast. Now, this was the situation of what had happened when Belshazzar took over. After Nebuchadnezzar died in 661, his son Evil-Marduk took over. Notice his name, Evil-Marduk. Marduk was regarded as the chief of all the gods amongst the Babylonians. Now, if you've ever seen films on Greek mythology, when I was younger, I used to like watching Jason and the Argonauts, you will know that Zeus is the chief god of the Greeks. It's the same in the Babylonians. Their chief god was Marduk. And so that's what he called him. But he was assassinated by another person called Nergal-Sharezer. He's actually mentioned in the Bible. And he was the son-in-law of Nebuchadnezzar II. And then after him came Lebesh Marduk. But he was also assassinated. He was assassinated by Nabonidus. And in 556, Nabonidus started to reign. But he only reigned for 3 years because he was actually an Assyrian. He shouldn't have been reigning at all, and the Babylonians hated him. And so in 553, when he went to Timur in Arabia while he was raiding out there, he decided he liked it so much that he was going to stay there. And so Belshazzar took over. Now this explains something that the Bible teaches, because critics to the book of Daniel always claimed that the Bible had got its history wrong. They said that Nabonidus reigned from 556 to 539 and Belshazzar never reigned. But in 1853, archaeologists found a little thing. It looks like a mini roll, and it's today in the British Museum with an inscription on it that told us exactly what happened. And Belshazzar did start reigning in 553 BC. Now this explains a statement that is actually made in this book. If you, Daniel, are able to tell me the meaning of the writing on the wall, I will make you the third ruler in the kingdom. Nabonidus was the first ruler, Belshazzar the second, now he's saying that Daniel can be the third ruler. Nobody understood what that meant until this archaeological discovery was made. By the days of Belshazzar's feast, the Persians had defeated the Babylonians. They defeated the Babylonians at a place called Otus. They fought for 3 days. We know from the Nabonidus Chronicles, which were found in the 19th century, we know from them that those dates were between the 25th and the 27th of September in the year 539 BC. Within a few days, they were at the walls of Jerusalem. Sorry, why did I say Jerusalem? Babylon. Planning to destroy it, but they had a problem. They had huge walls. They were 87 feet thick, and they could race 5 chariots across them if they wanted to. How do you get through these walls? But the Babylonians were rather stupid. They built this basin into which they could offload all their water when they wanted to. And the Persians discovered this. And when they discovered this, they let all the water out of the water tunnel that was underneath the city out into this basin and came through the water tunnel. And they killed one man that night, Belshazzar. And this has been confirmed by Greek historians as well as Babylonian sources, that that's all they killed, one man. They confirmed that the Bible is absolutely 100% accurate in the statements it makes. Okay, let's go on now to chapter 6. In chapter 6, we get the famous story about Daniel in the lion's den. And this event happens in the first year of Darius the Mede. Now, once again, people have attacked the book of Daniel because they've said there was no such person as Darius the Mede. But what they overlook is that people in ancient times often had several names. One of the kings of Israel actually had six different names. Darius the Mede was probably one of Cyrus' generals. Once again, the Nabonidus Chronicles tell us that on the 4th of October, Cyrus came into the city of Babylon, and he came in with his general, Gabrias. And it's generally believed in history that this Gabrias is exactly the same person as Darius the Mede. But he's just not called that in any book other than the Bible. But that's who they believe he actually was. Now, a lot of people don't realise this, but Daniel by this time would have been between 82 and 87 years old. Most people think of Daniel as a young man in the lion's den. He was not a young man. He was between 82 and 87, and he spent close to 70 years in Babylon. He left Israel between the ages of 15 and 20. We know that from a statement that's made in Daniel 1, where it actually tells you his age is between 15 and 20. That doesn't come out in the English text, but it does come out in the Hebrew text. So now we get on to the most famous chapter in the book of Daniel, which is Daniel chapter 9. And notice that once again it says, in the first year of Darius, the son of Ahasuerus, of the seed of the Medes. That is the timing of it. The year is 538 BC. Now, the Nabonidus Chronicles confirmed that that was indeed the time. Look at what it goes on to say. He was over the realm of the Chaldeans. The Chaldeans is another name for the Babylonians. In the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, understood by books the number of years of which the Lord had spoken to Jeremiah the prophet that he would accomplish 70 years in the desolation of Jerusalem. Now this is the situation of what happened. When Cyrus took over in 539, he made a decree that all the Jews should be released. Here we are in 538, and no Jews have been released. So Daniel's puzzled by this, because he knows that Cyrus is the person who's going to release the Jews. You know why he knows it's going to be Cyrus, don't you? Because in Isaiah chapter 44 and 45, it actually mentions Cyrus. So he's thinking to himself, he knows the prophecy of Isaiah, he's thinking to himself, oh, we're going to get released. Why have we not been released? So he starts to delve into the book of Jeremiah, and he starts to discover that the book says in both chapters 25 and 29 that they're going to be in Babylon for 70 years. And he realizes that they haven't been in Babylon for 70 years. They'd been in Babylon by that time for about 67, 68 years. They were still a couple of years short. That's why he studied that. Now, if you go back to the book of Jeremiah for a minute and see what it says. Jeremiah chapter 29. Starting at verse 10. Sorry, where am I going? I'm in the wrong direction. For this is what the Lord says, 70 years shall be accomplished for Babylon. I will visit you and perform my good word to you in causing you to return to this place. This place is Jerusalem. For I know the thoughts that I think towards you, says the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end. Now, the expected end, ultimately, is that Israel would be the head and not the tail. That's what the book of Deuteronomy promised. Israel would ultimately be the top kingdom, as it were, in God's kingdom, which they will be in the millennial kingdom. Then shall you call upon me, and you shall go and pray unto me, and I will hear you. And you shall seek me and find me when you search for me with all your heart. And I will be found of you, says the Lord, and I will turn away your captivity, and I will gather you from all the nations and from all the places where I have driven you, says the Lord. And I will give you again unto this place where I have caused you to be carried away captive. So Daniel reads this and he realizes that there's a promise here that if he turns towards the Lord and he starts to pray about these things, that the Lord will turn away their captivity and will deliver them. That's what he was reading. And that's what made him start to think about these things. He realized once again that there had to be 70 years. So again, he's got the idea of 70 years times 7 equals 490. Later on, Jesus comes up with exactly the same statement. Do you remember how Peter says to him, "Shall I forgive people 7 times?" Now, he thought he was being gracious because the Pharisees said you should only forgive somebody 3 times. After that, you've had your lot. But Jesus says, no, 70 times 7, 490 times. That's how many times God forgave Israel. He forgave them for 490 years. So this is what we've got in our minds. Now let's turn to this incredible prophecy, Daniel 9, verses 24 to 26. Mm-hmm. 70 weeks are determined upon the people and upon the holy city, Jerusalem, to finish the transgression, to make an end of sin, and to make reconciliation for iniquity, and to bring in everlasting righteousness, and to seal up the vision of prophecy, and to anoint the most holy place, that should say. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem unto the Messiah, the Prince, shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. The street shall be built again, and the wall, even in troublous time. And after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off. That means that he'll die at that time. But not for himself, and the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the prince thereof shall be with, and the end thereof shall be with a flood. When a flood's used symbolically, it means a military invasion. It's talking about the military invasion of the Romans in 70 AD. And unto the end of that shall be the legislations are determined. So this tells us precisely when Christ is going to die. He's going to be cut off, he's going to die. Now some of this causes a certain amount of problems because it says 70 weeks. It shouldn't say 70 weeks. The Hebrew word there is sabuim. Sabuim means sevens, 70 times sevens. And the context of the passage is years. So it's 70 times sevens years, 490 years, exactly the amount of time that Daniel's already been thinking and praying about. The time that Israel were punished for, the 490 years they failed to keep sabbatical years. Now, over the years, this has caused a lot of problems. How exactly this 70 times 7 years work out? Most Bible scholars agree that the 70th of these sevens refers to the Great Tribulation. It's after 69, 7 plus 62 equals 69, doesn't it? After 69 of these sevens, which is 483 years. Right, can you put up the one with four views on it, please? And over the years, this has caused a lot of problems. Can everybody see that? The four views. Because they have said that there were four different commandments that were made at four different times. So how do we know which one we should go by? And the number one is the 444 to 445 view. I'll tell you why I include both views in a minute. One is 458 to 457. One is 521. And one is 539. Because something was done in four of those time periods to restore the city and the temple. So people say, well, which one of these is right? Well, it's simple. You just work out which one works out mathematically to be correct. So let's start off with the first one, first of all. Have you got the one that says Anderson's timeline, please? There's a man called Robert Anderson, and he actually wrote quite a bit about the book of Daniel. He once wrote a book called Daniel in the Critic's Den, rather than Daniel in the Lion's Den. And he went into some of these different problems that people have with the book of Daniel. And he said this, this is how it all works out. You start off from 445 AD, which was when a man called Artaxerxes Longimanus made a decree to free the Jews. And you times it by 483 by 360, which as I'm sure you all know works out to 173,880, which it does. And if you want to do it by Roman Gregorian years, then it's 476 years and 29 days. If you times all that, it comes out with exactly the same number. So you can do it in either of those two different methods. But it works out that Jesus would have been crucified in 32 AD. Now, can anybody remember what year I told you last time Jesus was crucified? 33 AD. So our maths are out by a year, aren't they? So can we find another year? Well, the answer is yes, we can. Because you see, Anderson died in 1918. And there was something he didn't know. But in 1930 and 1931, archaeologists started to investigate the Chaldees. Now, as you remember, that's where Abraham originally came from. The Chaldees is an ancient name for Babylon. And they found a cuneiform tablet. If you don't know what a cuneiform tablet is, it's a clay tablet where they used to use like a wedge, and they used to be able to write. And for something that's so primitive, you would be amazed at how well they were able to write on these things. And if you go to almost any museum, you're almost bound to see some cuneiform tablets there, and you'll see how good the writing really is. And on it, there was this inscription that said that Xerxes I, who was the predecessor to Artaxerxes Longimanus, he was actually his father, that he was still alive in December of the year 465 BC. And this completely threw them, because they thought that was the first year, or the accessional year, of Artaxerxes Longimanus. It threw all their maths out by a year. And they realized, therefore, that when you do the sums now, you don't start from 445, but you start from 444, which is why I called it the 445-444 view. And if you start from then, you end up at 33 AD. So that's how that one happens to work out. Now, there's another way of checking whether this is right or not. According to people who have worked all these things out, you can actually go on the internet and you can see lots of sites. They have worked out now exactly when the 14th of Nisan, the day that Jesus would have been crucified, what day it was in our dating system. And in 33 AD, it was a Friday, and it was the 14th of Nisan was the 3rd of April. Now, if it's 29 days, and you go back 29 days from April, you must end up in the English month of March, mustn't you? Can anybody tell me what two Jewish months occur in our English month of March? And you see, we could do with Louis or Paviris this morning, because they would probably know. Nobody knows? Well, the first is what we call the 12th month. You've got to be careful in Israel, because it's the 12th month in the religious year. Today, they don't go by the religious year, they go by the civil year. They're just about to start a new year in a couple of weeks. And it's the 7th month in the religious year, the month of Tishrei. But in the Bible, it always goes by the religious year. And if you work it out, it has to be either the 12th month in the religious year, the month of Adar, or the first month, which is the month of Nisan. Now, the question that comes up was, did this decree happen in the month of Adar or Nisan? Because if it didn't, then it's just a coincidence that all the mathematics work out. Well, let's turn to the book of Nehemiah. That's three books before the book of Psalms. Psalms, Job, Esther, Nehemiah. And see whether Nehemiah actually really did ask the king if he could go to Jerusalem in one of these 2 months. Nehemiah 2, verse 1. And it came to pass in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes the king, that I was before him and I took up the wine, because he was a wine taster, wasn't he? So it was the month of Nisan. Now, what are the odds against this, if this is the wrong view? Well, the odds of getting the year right, I would have thought, were at least 200 to 1 against. The odds of getting the month right, well, there's only 2 right months and there's 10 wrong ones, 5 to 1 against. So the odds of getting this right are about 1,000 to 1 against. This prophecy shows that Jesus must have been the Messiah. Jesus was the first person who ever claimed to be the Messiah. Since him, 46 other people have claimed to be the Messiah. Now, according to the prophetic witness movement and Tim LaHaye, Jesus fulfilled 109 prophecies from the Old Testament when he came the first time. None of these other 46 messiahs fulfilled more than 6. They did fulfill some. If you're born in the tribe of Judah, you fulfill one. If you're born in Bethlehem, you fulfill another. But he fulfilled 109. But this one prophecy alone tells us that the Messiah had to die in 33 AD, and no other person who claimed to be the Messiah ever died in 33 AD. In fact, none of them had even claimed to be the Messiah by then. This passage proves that Jesus must have been the Jewish Messiah. Unfortunately, you would think that this view, that at this stage all the Christians would be leaping around, punching the air, and saying, well, what good evidence? Well, some people like making things hard for themselves. Actually, there are a lot of people who do go along with this view. The vast majority of Bible scholars today that I know go along with this view. Let me tell you some of the people who go along with this view. Roger Price, John Wolford, Renardus Showers, Chuck Misler, Tony Pierce, Don Hender, Josh McDowell, Thomas Ice, did I say Chuck Smith? He also goes along with it. Those are some of them, and I could also name some others, but you've probably heard of some of those people. Very knowledgeable. Now, it's true that some of them believed Anderson's timeline and thought that it was 32 AD. All that means is that they didn't know this little bit of extra archaeology that others do know. That's all it means. Now, unfortunately, some people have claimed that this is the incorrect view, despite the fact that the mathematics work out, not just to the very year, but even the very month that Jesus died. And some people say the correct view is the 458 to 457 BC. The Jehovah Witnesses actually believe this is the correct view. See if you can work out what they get wrong. This is what they say. They say if you add 483 years onto 457 BC, you get 27 AD. If you then add 3.5 years of Christ's ministry onto it, you get 31 AD, and 31 AD is when he died. Can you see what they got wrong? First of all, they're using a Roman calendar, but they didn't convert it into Roman time. They took 483 years when they should have taken 476. Secondly, it came out at the time when Jesus started ministering. The prophecy is supposed to come out at the time that Jesus died. If you work out things according to the correct timeline, if you start from 457, you will end up with a crucifixion date of 20 AD. I don't think anybody here believes that Jesus was crucified in 20 AD, do they? If you take this 521 view, it works out that Jesus' crucifixion would have occurred in 45 BC. That's nearly 40 years before he was even born. And if you take the 539 BC view, well, I want to talk a bit about this because this is the view of a man called David Cooper. And now, when Arnold Brugsenbaum was here, he actually worked out a timeline that showed you how it all worked out 33 AD, the same as I did. He showed you two timelines the same as I did. And his words were, it all appears to fit in very nicely, mathematically. That's because it's the correct answer. Mathematics and Bible prophecy always add up precisely. They've got to be 100% correct. God never gets anything even slightly wrong, and neither does mathematics. If you claim in a mathematics quiz that 9 times 9 equals 80 when it equals 81, you will get scored wrong. And it's the same with Bible prophecy. God is a great mathematician. Now, I think I'm pretty good at maths, but he's a lot better than me. So he would not get anything wrong mathematically. I think the fact that he did this shows that he liked mathematics like me. But then maybe I'm a bit biased. Let me tell you why I don't like the 539 BC view, and I think it's completely the wrong view. Number one objection to it is that the year is already 538 BC, and you cannot prophesy something that happened the year before. That's not prophecy, that's what we call history. Oh, I'm going to prophesy that Arsenal are going to beat Chelsea in last year's FA Cup 2-1. Well, they did beat them in last year's, well, the years before it was now, wasn't it? You know, you can tell people what's happened in the past. That's just history. Nobody's impressed by people prophesying things that have already happened. So if it's already 538, as archaeologists tell us it is, it cannot be part of the prophecy. All the events happened in Nehemiah's day. This passage didn't just talk about the building up of the temple, it also talked about the building up of the city. No building up of the city was ever done until Nehemiah's day. In fact, Nehemiah was upset because a man came to him, one of his countrymen. It says his brother in the Bible, so it may have even been quite literally his brother. And he was very upset because the walls hadn't been built at all. Nearly 100 years after Cyrus' decree, and still Jerusalem is in complete rubble. If you read on through Nehemiah, it says there was a lot of rubbish in the place. First thing they did when they got back was they spent 52 days building the walls of Jerusalem. The third reason I don't like it is this. The restoring of the city is the first of the 7 times 7s. It starts off by telling you about 7 times 7s and then talks to you about 62 times 7s. And in any Bible commentary, you ask, well, why did they split it up? And all Bible commentators say the same thing, because the first 7 times 7s referred to the restoring of the city and the building up of the city. So therefore, that has to come first before the 62 times 7s. The fourth reason I don't like it is Cyrus did not make a decree in March. The decree had to be made in March, so these 20-odd days go into April, the time when Christ was crucified. But he never took the city until October the 4th. Well, the date of 539 BC, according to biblical historians, is supposed to be the best attested date in the entire Bible. Because the Greeks talk about it, the Babylonians talk about it, there's been archaeological discoveries about it. They know that Cyrus made that decree in 539. Well, if he never took the city till the 4th of October, and you had these 20-odd days that we have in the Roman calendar, 29 days according to Thomas Ice, you will come out a day somewhere between October and January. So Jesus would have to have been crucified between October and January if you work out the mathematics. The fifth reason I don't like it is the maths don't work out. You will work out with a crucifixion date of 63 BC, over half a century before Christ was even born, if you believe this view is possible. Now, while Arnold says that the 440 view is possible, he also believes that this view is possible. Well, I agree with Arnold on 99% of doctrine. I don't agree on this 1% of doctrine. The mathematics just don't work out. Now, he refers you to this man, David Cooper. Now, David Cooper's book on this, where he supposedly explains all this, is out of print. That's what I was told when I tried to get it. But I went on the internet and I found 43 pages of Cooper's explanation. Did he produce a timeline like the people who start from 444 do? No, he didn't. No stage in those 43 pages did he show any timeline. I'm not surprised. It's rather difficult to go from the year 539 BC to the year 33 AD when you've only got 476 Roman years. It's mathematically impossible. So I'm not surprised that he didn't. But he claims that actually somebody, if you read his article, it appears to be the Persians, changed history by 82 years. And if you take these 82 years into account, in other words, they put 82 years into the calendar that simply weren't there. Now, I did some research on this to find out a bit about this and the Persians, because Arnold had also said that they were dodgy when it came to dates. So I found out that at one time they went according to the Zoroastrian calendar, then the Islamic calendar, then the Persian calendar, and then the Iranian calendar. They changed from Persia to Iran in 1935. So that's what I found out. And I found out that they do have a point. The Persians have cheated on their history a lot. They've claimed that one event happened after another when really happened before it. They've taken dates out, they've put in dates in, and all sorts of things. They've got up to all sorts of nonsense. And it turns out the reason why they've done this is because for the last 1,500 years, Iran has been dominated by one religious faith, Islam. And Muslims believe that it's quite all right to do this sort of thing. If it suits the cause of Allah, then you can do anything you like, and you can lie as much as you want to. So, now is this a problem for us? No, it's not, because first of all, even if you add 82 years onto 63 AD, you do not come out at 33 AD or 30 AD. You come out at 20 AD. And that shouldn't surprise you, because if you take 82 years off 539, you end up at 457. So all you're really doing is teaching the 457 view all over again. And it doesn't work out. The maths simply do not work out. It works out at 20 AD. So it doesn't work out. Now, another way of doing this is to go backwards. When I was a child, I used to like playing with puzzle books. And have you ever seen these puzzle books where they have five children and they all go fishing? Who caught the fish? And do you know, I used to try number one, no, number two, number three, it always seemed to be number five that I tried that caught the fish. But as I started to grow up, I realized I was doing this the whole wrong way. The correct way to do it is to start from the fish. Then you get it right the first time every single go. You see, I got smarter as I started to get older. Well, let's start from the fish here. If you start from 30 AD and you go backwards, you end up in the year 447. Did any decree happen in 447? No. If you start 33 AD and you go backwards, you end up in the year 444. Did any decree happen that year? Yes, the decree of Artaxerxes Longimanus. Now, some people said it's not a decree, but actually, if you look up the Hebrew word, it merely means word or command, and it was a command. He commanded Nehemiah to do these things. But the question I want to raise here is, how did Daniel know these things? To predict something with such incredible precision, it's like you predicting the exact football scores of about 50 different matches and being absolutely right. There's very little chance of you getting it right, is there? And yet, that's exactly what happened. Now, when I was talking about this last time, I talked about how Richard Dawkins thought that Christians were deluded for believing in Christianity. But here you have clear proof that Daniel really was a true prophet of God. Nobody could possibly do this without being a true prophet of God. Only God could know all this and be so precise about it. So who is really deluded? Well, a man called Alistair McGrath, shortly after Dawkins had written his famous book, The God Delusion, he wrote another book called The Dawkins Delusion, and going into lots of reasons why he believes it was Dawkins who is deceived. And it's quite true. Let's take the issue of dating. We're constantly told that all sorts of things happened millions and billions of years ago. The latest one is that the Earth is now between 18 and 20 billion years old, which is rather funny because in 1990 it was only 13.1 billion, which means it's got 5 to 7 billion years older in the last 30 years. So they must be wrong on that. But you know, in 2004, a laboratory in Colorado found soft tissue in a dinosaur, and they asked some of these dating laboratories to do it. And the guy actually taped the talks. The first guy went absolutely ballistic and said that this guy was trying to destroy modern-day science and send the science community back hundreds of years because he pointed out that soft tissue were found in dinosaurs. Soft tissue dissolves after a few thousand years in dinosaurs, apparently. So I'm told. So he wouldn't do it. The second guy, he was offered £3,000 to do the test, another £20,000 for him personally. He said, I would not do the test under any circumstances whatsoever. Many years ago, I went to a Christian conference, and because no one in my church was going there, the people at the conference, they got somebody to take me, somebody bring me back. The person who brought me back was actually one of these scientists who had done a lot of this dating. And she said, they all know it doesn't work, she said, and yet they still go on dating it. They dated a seal that died in the Washington Zoo a week later, and they dated it at 4,600 years. Every time they do any of these datings, they always turn out to be wrong. So it seems to me that it's Richard Dawkins who's the one who's deluded. I think we've got very strong proof, just in Daniel's prophecy alone, that Jesus really was the Messiah, and that God really does talk to people, and that God certainly talked to Daniel, who Jesus said was a prophet. And that's it.